Egunon, sail ofizialeko lehiaketaz kanpoko London Road filmaren prentzaurrekoa egingo dugu orain. Buenos días.
Good morning, and let's commence the press conference of the film of the official section outside the competition, London Road. And we have with us the director, Rufus Norris, composer Adam Cork, actors and actresses Anita Dobson, Claire Bird, Michael Schaefer, Port Tembley, and the screenplay Lecky Blythe and Dixie Linder, the producer. So they're eagerly awaiting your questions here in the front row. Hope all of you can hear me. Thank you. First question in the front row. Good on you. Hi, congratulations for the film, first of all, and my question's for the director, whether at any moment you wanted to use another type of genre to address the plot that the film, the issue that the film addresses.
In a way, I'm not the right person to ask, because this piece was created before I, in some ways, was created before I came on board. It started its life as a theatre piece at the National Theatre in London and was written by these two people here. So the genre was already set before I came on. So possibly the best person to ask is Aleky.
I approached the story in the way that I always work, which is always recording conversations from real life. So I was working on a story about a certain group of sex workers in another part of the country when the events in Ipswich happened in 2006, when five women sex workers were murdered. So I went to Ipswich to see whether there was any material there to collect for this other play, and I realised, no, this was a whole other story. And what I was capturing was a town living through a horrific time. And so I decided to talk to the people living in the town. And that's how it really started, because I was really working on another piece. But I always work in this way, creating plays or films from real edited, real-life audio recordings.
Hi, my question is for the director and screenwriters. Weren't you worried about the effect of the movie on people? Have you had any reactions about it? Because it's such a dark subject to be treated as a musical. So how are people dealing with it?
Well, we were aware from the beginning, from when we actually did the show, that we had to sort of talk about it in a certain way, because yes, it is a musical, but it's a rather unconventional musical, and so it was trying to sort of explain that it wasn't maybe what people were expecting. So it was sort of about trying to sort of educate people to realize that it was coming at it from a different angle, that it wasn't actually about the women themselves, and it was about the community.
And also there's something in very beguiling in a way about the word musical, because it brings into your mind visions of dancing and sparkly costumes and fun stuff, which is absolutely not what this story is about. There's a certain rigour in the way that Aleky approaches her dramatic work, which is all about absolutely capturing every detail of the vocal delivery of real people, which applying music to that was a sort of way of taking that rigour to another level, and I suppose having a certain respect not only for the story but for the people who Aleky has interviewed through our method.
I think that also there's something about the history of musical theatre which is worth touching on here. The accepted way to create a musical now is with a commercial producer, whether it's in film or in theatre, because it's very, very expensive to do that. And consequently, the producers are looking for something which is accessible and has a very wide appeal. And so they are encouraged to make the work not very challenging or difficult. At the National Theatre in London, we have a very unusual resource in that we can cook work that is pushing the boundaries of a lot of these genres. And this was, for us, and one of the main reasons that we wanted to make a film from it as well is that it's a very rare example of when a group of fantastic artists are given the opportunity to really take the genre into an area which is maybe a little bit more serious, certainly more experimental.
I think it's also important to know that the real-life residents are in the film. We had their blessing, and in the party scene at the end, they all came in and joined in and loved the experience of it and had seen the play, so they also knew what to expect.
Yeah, I mean, it, all the way through, Alec, he was in communication with all the people who were interviewed and also the organisation that deals with the rehabilitation of the drug users in the town, of which all of those working girls were part of that community.
Hi, my question for the cast, actors and actresses, how did you live through the real events that took place in Ipswich in 2006 when that occurred? How did you live that at that time when it occurred?
I was actually in Ipswich working, doing a stage production at the time the murders were happening. So for me, it was a very potent experience because I was trying to do advertising for my show, and of course the news was full of the fact that these poor girls were being murdered. So afterwards, subsequently after that, when there was talk of the musical being made, I suppose I was a little surprised and not sure whether that would be a good idea because it was such a tricky subject. But I have to say that having come on board at this latter stage, the film, I think it's one of the greatest tributes that the people in Ipswich could have ever imagined would have been done for those girls. So a lot of good has come out of it. But it was a very harrowing time. Nobody was on the streets. The streets were absolutely deserted. And it wasn't till they finally caught him that police allowed people to return to their normal lives.
I think this shows what happens when the TV cameras and the newspapers have gone home, because we all see these headlines in newspapers about terrible things that happen, which all piques our interest for a very short period of time, and then everyone disappears and forgets all about it. But there's a lot of distress and trouble and difficulties that are left behind after that, which I hope that this film shows, and the effects of that, and maybe we'll think twice about getting overexcited about a salacious headline.
Yeah, the only thing I'd add to that is, for me, what was really exciting about this project was that it gave a voice to people who wouldn't normally have a voice. So the events of the awful events of the murders were at the centre of the episode, but our play, our film, focuses on the kind of ripple effects that those events had, and I think we kind of overlook that a lot, and it's kind of fascinating for me to hear those people's stories.
I haven't anything to add. When the events took place, I lived in France, and so it wasn't as huge in my world as it was for those living in Great Britain.
Hey, good afternoon. A question for the composer. And for the director, well, extend it also to the cast, if possible. The score, is that an adaptation 100%? Is it faithful to the musical, original musical? That's what I would like to know. And for the actors, well, the director, first of all, as regards to all of the extras that appear in the film, apart from the main cast, are they related in some way to the original, or are they part of the choir, or the actors, for example, whether did you take any singing classes or whether you already had experience in musicals beforehand? Hope you got all those three.
I've got mine. Should I go first? For the most part, most of the songs from the theatre version remained in the film. We cut one song that was more effectively told through pictures and more conventional movie score. It's the moment when the press turn up in London Road and the residents all think, oh, what's happening here? Our lives are ruined. These tents are going up, these huge lights are being put in our street and we're not getting any sleep. There was a song in the original stage version which it was very theatrical and it worked on stage, but it was more effective to do something differently with the film. We also added a song, the song at the beginning called No Let Up, where we meet the reporters on the televisions of the London Road residents, and they all sing about what's happening. It's a way of setting the scene and introducing our musical language, which is all about, are they speaking? Are they singing? I'm not sure. Oh, they are singing. So it's a neat little way into that. I suppose I should pass on to the next.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when there's any adaptation, there are very radical changes that happen to make the story or fit for the medium that we're moving it into. So in this case, the actors in the theatre show, there are 11 of them, and they played each of them 6 or 7 parts. So by expanding the cast out to 75 already, it's a very, very different very different entity. I mean, it was crucial for us that we kept all of the original cast in the piece. Not just out of loyalty, but because it is incredibly difficult material to sing. You know, if I'm speaking on behalf of the actors to one of your questions, everybody who is involved in the show and then in the film who have leading singing roles are of the absolute highest caliber in terms of their technical skill. And all of them have worked in that way before. Yeah, beyond that, it's about making it a film. So the things that make a film work are not the same as theatre. So Aleki and I started from the beginning and then Adam came in and we really set about trying to make it, as I said, a visual story as well as a theatrical one. Don't know if the actors want to pick up from there.
I think I speak for all of us, in terms of a technical exercise, it's the most difficult thing any of us have ever done, and the most complicated musical score. And part of the challenge of that was making it sound like we weren't singing. So people watch the film and go, well, you're not really singing. It's really hard. Yeah. And but hopefully by people thinking we're not really singing, we're doing our jobs properly. But with the fastidious nature of the work and the strictness of Aleki and Adam, you can't say instead of it all has to be right. So we all drove ourselves a little bit mad trying to learn it, and occasionally got a bit cross when Adam turned up and told us all off, but I think the end result proves that they were right.
I can't imagine how these guys, the three people sitting on my left, managed to do the stage show, because I wasn't in the stage show, and I have done musical theatre, but nothing like this. When I went up for the audition, I thought it was one of the weirdest things I'd ever come up against, and I had no idea how they were going to do it. But I have to say, it has been one of the most exciting jobs I've ever had, and I've really enjoyed it. And I think, because of the format, it makes it seem much more realistic than normal films. Somehow you get drawn in, you get kind of entranced and beguiled by the way people are, and I think it really works.
Yeah, it's a
completely new way of working, really. No, to my knowledge, nobody's ever sort of done this before. And so there was no precedent to fall back on and to try to reference. So when we were first rehearsing it for the theatre, you know, we didn't have a clue what we were doing. We were doing this really strange little thing, and it ended up, people liked it, and now here we are, we've made a film of it. It's kind of crazy, but it's really Alecky and Adam, and their extraordinary work that's brought us here.
And in a way, there are precedents. Mozart and De Ponte, in a way, were trying to capture the natural rhythms of speech. And then more recently, Stephen Sondheim in some of his work, or in fact, in all of his work, it could be argued that that's a development in that. And what Adam's done is just taken it to the absolute extreme. It's one of those extraordinary things that if you listen to Alecky's original recording and then you hear the song, you'll understand the absolute detail of.
There are precedents in non-dramatic concert music as well by Steve Reich. He takes recordings of people talking about things and presents them instrumentally, almost in an abstract way, for the concert platform. But I think what might be unprecedented, although I'm not totally sure about this, is that it takes that idea and presents it in a dramatically satisfying form. So you would get a proper story told from beginning to end, as well as this very experimental musical approach.
Hello.
At the back.
Just two questions. While I was watching the film, I was expecting to see Steve Wright's face, but you didn't show the face. And the question is, why did you choose not to show the face of the assassin, of the murderer? And for the characters, are all the characters real, actual people, or is there any invented character? For example, I thought that Tom Hardy's character is an invention, but I don't know. So, just those questions. Thank you.
Well, first of all, Steve Wright doesn't appear in the film because I'm very pleased to say I never met him. Everyone in the film they're all real people that I met and interviewed. And when I stumbled upon this story of this community, really the heart of it being the people who lived on London Road, and the fact that they'd gone to such extremes to have a gardening competition, set up their neighbourhood watch, all fuelled by what had gone before, that's when I realised that's what the story is. Up until that point, I'd been sort of painting a bit of a bigger picture, if you like, of people in Ipswich. So that's what I went with, and although I went to the trial, and there are some scenes that you see that are kind of filmed outside the trial, I never approached Steve Wright. I saw him in the courtroom, whatever, but I decided that the story of the community and what they were doing to rebuild themselves was a story that wasn't being told. Everyone in the papers in England, I don't know about over here, were trying to dig up whatever dirt they could get on Steve Wright, or even the women themselves. And I just thought this, the tale of the people who lived through it on the outside was something that people didn't know about. So that's why he doesn't appear in it. As for the character that Tom Hardy plays, that is actually, although everything that he actually says are real words that were said by somebody, however, that person in real life was a bartender. In the stage show, we sort of recreated that more faithfully, and it was a bartender sort of winding me up and two of his mates sitting at the bar having a drink. And actually, it was Rufus's idea to recreate. It didn't really work as a scene filmically, and we were also trying to integrate the residents more into every scene to make them more central than they were in the show. So I sort of cheated and pulled in some lines that Claire plays,
of her character and kind of put her in the cab, so that that scene, they never actually met in real life, although those words are taken from real people, if that answers your question. So there's quite a lot of sort of cheating.
But also the dramatic situation that you put them in is similar, pretty similar to the original.
Yes, exactly. The dynamic is somebody's winding somebody up and they're like, ooh, I'm getting a bit scared here. That's kind of, that's what I was feeling. But she was responding to something else. Her lines are taken completely out of context. So I kind of sat down and listened to hours of her chat and kind of thought, what can I take from here? And her character seemed to be the closest to the most vulnerable one that might find herself in that situation.
Hello. First of all, I want to congratulate you for this amazing project. It was so amazing to be able to enjoy this voyage that both the history and the roles all do. It's, oh my God, stunning for me. And I'm really interested in the composition process. If you can just tell me important details, how much time took to you and all important details that you put in those moments, both in the really dramatical and the others to make this stunning music, and also your relation between the writer and the director. You were always involved. Did you have to change some music in some times? And thank you all.
Yeah, well, in terms of the composition process, it was quite clear after listening to Aleki talk about her verbatim method when she's making plays. Normally she records people talking, as we've said, and in the rehearsals, the actors have in-ear monitors so they can hear Aleki's edited recordings and reproduce what they're hearing verbatim. So they're copying what they're hearing. It's an act of, it's almost like doing an impression. You do an impression of someone, but it's a strange experience to watch it on stage because it's almost as if the performers are possessed by the spirits of the people who they're playing. So I was a bit stumped at first, but then I thought, oh, well, if we take this to its ultimate conclusion, it's about very accurately transcribing the pitch of the notes of what people are saying. So I would listen over and over to phrases, and I would isolate the notes, and crucially the rhythms, actually, because the notes ultimately ended up changing a little bit to fit into satisfying song-like dramatic structures. But the rhythm always was preserved, and also lines which kind of took more than conventional four-bar phrases, I just let them do that. They just kind of went all the way over the phrase structures. Even though the phrase structures are there, the lines just kind of dribble all over them. And I suppose that's how it began. And as far as then turning it into something that's musical and dramatic, I suppose using many voices to sing one thing that maybe one person said, because obviously when Aleki was doing her interviews, people weren't saying the same thing all together all at the same time, but lots of people were saying things that were similar to things that other people were saying, like everyone is very, very nervous, or people were singing, you know, about when it comes to the flower competition, people were sort of talking at length about how happy it made them to do the gardening and to be involved with the flower competition, so there's an obvious thing there. So you can really represent things like the fear of the community on the one hand at the beginning of the story, with lots of people singing the same thing, and build, layer that up into kind of choral, impactful, dramatic sequences. And at the other end of the story, people singing about the sort of regenerative power of, you know, natural things and community. Music can bring, in a very direct and quick way, that ingredient to bear, I think. Whereas if it's just talking, it takes, you know, you can do the same job, but it takes a bit longer.
And I think that's what we discovered when we first started working together. I had sort of short interviews with people because I'd just sort of more vox poppy, like brief interviews on the street. And once we found by sort of repeating certain lines, it did seem to take me back to how I felt at the time, even though it had been manufactured and cheated a little bit. I was like, yeah, this is really kind of building the mood that I felt, whereas if we just did it in my normal style, just talking, you wouldn't quite feel how absolutely, you know, how scary it really was. So we sort of discovered that quite early on when we first met.
Hello, congratulations. And now the question in Spanish, because otherwise I'm lost in translation. One question.
The film is a choral, a collective film. There's a lot of... what was the work amongst all of the cast? Because no one stands out more than anyone else. It's a very sort of choral effort, as in as if in a choir. Everyone's, so no one stands out. And the second question is very short. The scene, the market scene with the bags at the beginning of the film, when everyone's in the market and they move, and there's almost a bit of dancing going down. That must have been very, very difficult to shoot when the outside market and everyone put their bags down and stopped and so on and so forth. That must have been very difficult to shoot. How did you manage to do that?
So the first question was about the ensemble nature of the piece. I mean, I don't know if you want to. I'm going to pass that down to the folks who are doing it.
Thanks.
Okay, then I won't. Yeah, as Alecky has already said, this is a story of a community that heals itself. Now, actually, in many ways, that's a pretty classic story. Most stories are about a community that heals itself, but the community is made manifest in one relationship between a man and a woman, or a man and a man, a woman, you know, or a child and their parent, or even a person reconciling himself or herself with themselves. It's just a bit more opened out in this way. We did restrict it for the film a little more, down to five or six key characters, whereas in the original show there were 11 really, and that felt too many to follow, but yeah, it felt really crucial that it was balanced in that sense. I don't know, were you going to say anything on that one, Dan?
Yes, it's not one person's story, and no. When you do meet all the residents, they come as this group. They patrol, don't they?
Yeah.
And they've come and seen the show and the film, and they all talk at the same time.
Yeah.
And have grown from this disparate road, which was blighted by all sorts of troubles, to being friends with each other. That may sound trite, but it's true. And it has brought them all together, and that's the story that we need to tell, not the story of individuals.
Yeah, and I think when I was doing the collecting, I wouldn't just go back and knock on one person's house. I'd make sure I got all of those characters. I was like, have I done Julie? Have I done Ron and Rosemary? And then you can sort of compare and contrast different people's views and takes on things. And so that was very much in the building of it, just in the collecting the interviews. It was quite a communal approach from the beginning. So I think that's why it's ended up like that.
It's also something that the actors instinctively kind of went for without any prior discussion, just to sort of to be a collective without any egos getting in them. And we found that when we went into rehearsals in the theatre, didn't we? From the word go, everyone was very up for that ensemble feel.
I think it is perhaps more common in theatre to have that sort of ensemble. And in a way, we were sort of united
by our fear
and by how difficult it was, especially the music, to try and learn. And it left no room for ego or any of that nonsense. We just had to work so hard to be able to get the thing on. And I think it did produce a kind of community. So it feels like the London Road lot, you know, we're quite a tight-knit unit, and we are sort of bonded by this experience that we've shared. And it's been really lovely to open that out and share it with new people, with Anita and with Olivia and Tom. And it's a bit of a rite of passage, you know. It is this really complicated, tricky thing to do. So if new people come in and try to do it, we totally understand what they're going through. And we try to help if we can.
And I think it all stems from listening as opposed to talking. Because you have to listen so intently when the dialogue is going on. You have to listen for when that person says that. You have to listen. To learn one line of dialogue takes 5 hours. Because every stutter,
you have to get exactly right, the timing, the pitch, the intonation. And I think when you do that, you can't have your own take on it. There isn't a take to have. We attempted to just be vessels for those people's voices, which I think adds to the collective choral experience.
As far as the second part of your question, the choreography, it was quite a tricky balance. When we first shot that scene, and in fact the market scene was one of the first things that we filmed, the choreography was much more complex. And on the first day, looking back over it, we realised that it was too much like dance. It was too obvious, and was not in keeping with the incredible detail, naturalistic detail of what Adam had done with Alecky's work, and of course what Alecky had done. So we reshot a lot of it on the second day and toned it right down, and that sort of set the level. You know, when the characters are there, the police are pulling the tape across, or when everybody's waiting outside the courtroom, there are all kinds of areas through it where it is very precisely choreographed, but trying to find a balance of it being incredibly subtle, in a way, to match the technique. It's in a way, it's verbatim choreography. What the choreographer did is he took very, very naturalistic movements and gradually built them up and slightly heightened them to try and balance that. But it's a tricky balance.
I just had two questions. I guess the first is a short question, and I suppose it should go to Michael Shafter. And it's this: is it true you can't say the word semen on British TV at certain hours or at certain times of the day?
I take Simon Newton's word for it. Yeah, I guess before six, is it?
That's right.
Yeah. Before 6 o'clock, you can't.
That's quite something. The other question for the rest of you, I mean, it all makes sense. I understand you. There's this will to make a musical to give some homage to the community, which is trying to rebuild itself, so forth. But in that context, there was a statement that sort of went through me. It's when one of the ladies who is the organizer, and she says, I would have shaken his hand, I won't have the courage to do so, something like that. I'm paraphrasing, evidently. But I wanted to know if that is just a single statement from somebody specific, or if that is maybe something more. Because it would seem as if the lady there is sort of grateful to the assassin for having, quote-unquote, cleansed the neighborhood of the sex workers. So I would like some comment on that, specific scene, and how it fits in the ensemble of what you said.
Well, she said that, and it was that character who said it. Those lines, they're not taken from anybody else, and you know, we knew that we had to be very careful with them and where we place them in both the show and the film, because they were, you know, like you've reacted to them like we did. But I felt it was important that they were included, because to say something like that, I think, you know, you're shaped, aren't you? Your opinions are shaped by your experiences. And it was because of the years of what she'd lived through was what kind of led her to have that opinion that, you know, is maybe shocking and difficult for us to understand. But I just felt that it was a very honest thing, and maybe there were other people on the road who felt the same way, because they'd be blighted by the problem of, you know, drug paraphernalia in their gardens, curb crawlers constantly up the road. So it's, you know, it sits, that comes from, I think, you know, sitting on top of years of trying to deal with it, phoning the police did nothing about it. And as she says, as awful as it is what happened, it sometimes tragically takes awful events like that in order for anyone to do anything about it. So yeah, it's very complicated. And, you know, I checked with her that it was okay to put it in, because, of course, by the time, I mean, it's obviously it's a long time now, but when we did the show, which was 2011, she'd said that to me, what, 4 or 5 years previously. So I sort of had to kind of just check that she was okay with it. And, you know, she did indeed say, yes, that's, that is how I felt. So, yes, I know it's an uncomfortable moment. And that's why I think it's important that it's in there.
I think it's really important that it's in there. I think in a way that it's the most important moment in the film, because there's something about the accuracy that we've been discussing of the technique, which has a real honesty at its heart. But in the UK, I don't know how it is here, but I imagine it's the same because we're all human. We're guilty of two things. We can have a very salacious response to murder or sex crimes, or, you know, we're obsessed with it. Most of the films that get released every year involve death and sex. So when it happens in real life, it's incredibly compelling, and so we will descend on these places and disregard the lives of the people who live there in order to get our fix of news. But at the same time, we can sit back and be liberal and say it's terrible that these girls are treated this way and that anybody could say something like that. And of course, the truth of life is that it's much more complicated if you're in the middle of it. Julie had teenage daughters, and every day she would go outside her house and would knock on the window of a car where a woman was giving a blowjob to a man, when her 14-year-old daughter is walking past. If that was any of us, we would also feel quite compromised by it. And for me, I think there's something very, very politically powerful about the story because of that. It's not, we don't want to hear it. It makes us not like her when we've liked her through the film. But I think it enables us to stand in her shoes in a way that perhaps isn't very comfortable. I mean, you know, The whole of Europe at the moment is obsessing, in our newspapers anyway, about the migrant crisis. But there's no real discussion going on about the deep-rooted things that have caused this. It's all the humanitarian effort, or no, we don't want them. It's the short-term responses to it. So a boy is washed up dead on the beach. And we all know this is being manipulated. The real truth of these situations is sometimes not easy to hear. But I think it's absolutely at the heart of why the piece is important.
Okay, we take one more question, please.
Hi, I'd like to know, for the director, what do you think of the reaction of some people when they read what the film's about the murdering of five prostitutes and what happens in the community? They're interested, but when all of a sudden they find out it's a musical, and all of a sudden they move away from it and say, oh, I don't like musicals, and they lose all connection with the film. What do you think about that possibility and what these people think about that?
Yeah, it's a challenge, and you know, one of the things that we're grappling with is that, and we had the same in the theatre, is that it's a very hard film to sell. You know, you talk about it and everybody goes, wow, why would I want to go and see that? And yet, people do respond to it because it's very human, and it is groundbreaking in terms of its form, and, you know, touch wood, the reviews and the response so far everywhere have been very positive. I don't really know what the... I suppose we hope that the reputation through the critical response is... I mean, you know, right now we're trying to sort out the American deal. And all these distributors come and they see the film and they go, we really love it, but we don't know how to sell it. This is one of the challenges. I hope in 20 years' time we'll be able to look back and go, okay, this film and this film would not have been possible if we hadn't made London Road. We know that we're breaking new ground, and I don't know, maybe that's one for you, actually. How do we sell this monster?
Well, I think film, you know, being here at San Sebastian helps, hopefully brings word of mouth. We were just in Toronto, and it was the first time that we'd shown it to an international audience, and we got some great reviews. We just found out the Village Voice in New York chose it as one of the top 10 films from Toronto, which is great. So we have to keep building up the reputation of the film. You are the first non-English-speaking audience that's seen it, so it's going to be interesting for us to see the reaction there. And we're just going to do everything we can to keep plugging it and giving it its best possible chance and finding people that have a passion for it in the way that we all have the passion for it to make it, to then go out and have a difficult job getting it into the marketplace, but we will do everything we can, you know, to help them and hopefully get those deals. And we've got a great sales team helping us with that as well.
All right, thank you very much. Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much.